We are Screams and Queens, a podcast for all lovers of horror movies, novels, and true stories. Your hosts are Bree, the book nerd, Megan, the horror expert, and Jenna, our token scaredy cat. Each week, we'll watch a horror movie and then talk about what scared us the most. Or should we say, what scared Jenna the most? We are Screams and Queens. Welcome to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Screams and Queens. I am your co-host, Bree.
I'm Jenna.
And I'm Megan.
And this week, we watched the movie off the Ted Bundy trial. Extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile. I knew I was going to mess that up.
The longest title ever to exist.
Yeah, I was afraid I was going to mess that title up. Anyway, so we found it on Netflix. It is a movie, like I said, based on the Ted Bundy trials, and it's not necessarily a horror movie. It's more of, I don't even know if it's a thriller. It's just more of the idea of it is horror-based.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's pretty scary, but it's just, it's not the type of thing that we've been watching recently where the jump scares come out. It's scary because it's real and it happened. And man, it could happen again.
It could happen to you.
That's the most terrifying part. Like, this dude is whacked.
Yeah.
Whacked to the max.
Wacky tobacky. It's really just, I guess the closest relation would be like a psychological thriller.
Yeah. I mean, not even that, because it wasn't really
crime drama.
Crime drama, yeah, yeah.
But this one was more emotional. It was like a sad love story with some murder behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Casual, you know, beheadings and stabbing. But it was romance.
Hacksaws, yeah. Okay, so I guess we'll start off with a brief movie summary. So it follows the Ted Bundy trials, but it's through the eyes of his then-girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, Elizabeth Klofter. I'm not sure
Klofter,
if I'm...
something
Klofter,
like that.
Yeah, like, okay. It's something... It's like K-L-O-E...
Klopfer.
Yeah, like C-L-O or K-L-O-E-P-F-E-R or something. And she goes... It's actually based off a book that she wrote called My Phantom Prince, My Life with Ted Bundy.
Wait, really?
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it?
Phantom Prince, yeah. No, I have not read it, which would...
Let's read it.
Yeah. So, this is actually going to be a two-part episode. So the first part is us going to be discussing the movie itself and then also kind of comparing it to this documentary that you could find on Netflix as well. But then the part two, which we'll release later, is going to be more the psychology behind Ted Bundy himself and just real life drama of Ted Bundy. So yeah, so her book, she actually went by the pseudonym Elizabeth Kendall, which there was even a part in the movie when she was, I don't know if she was boss at the time when they brought her in the letter, like, here's this letter.
Okay.
It said Elizabeth Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how long she had been Elizabeth Kendall, but, and we were also kind of talking about, well, Megan had mentioned she wondered how this affected her reputation.
Oh, yeah. You know, no one's going to trust you if you were, like, sleeping with a serial killer for years and years, and they're like, oh, she apparently doesn't have very good judgment.
Yeah.
Lost all credibility.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically the movie summary. It follows the trials and then ultimately ends in his execution. We'll go into fun facts next, and then we'll talk a little bit about the actual structure of the movie using the Freytag Pyramid. Then we'll talk about what scared us, what didn't scare us, and then a fun little game called What Would Your Strategy Be? Which in this scenario... This is going to be an interesting one for this one because I don't know. But so we'll dive into some fun facts. So the movie itself was released in 2019. It was directed by Joe Berlinger and executive produced by Zac Efron, who also plays Ted Bundy. It inspired the movie The Silence of the Lambs.
What?
The character Buffalo Bill.
I don't know him, but...
Oh, girl, you got much to learn.
Yeah, yeah, we'll watch Silence of the Lambs, but...
Wait, so Ted Bundy inspired Buffalo Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Buffalo Bill a killer?
No, he's a nice guy. He's a good guy. Yeah. Buffalo Bill was a murderer. He kept, like, women in his basement. You know, last night we actually were playing Heads Up, and there was a quote. Oh, yeah.
Girlfriend.
Yeah. We won't get into it. Jenna was doing splits on the floor.
Present, but not present at the same time.
We played Heads Up? Okay.
Well, you didn't play Heads Up. We played Heads Up. And we were on a scary movie category, and it was me guessing, and she said, or else it gets the hose again. And so the first part of that is, it puts the lotion in the basket.
Oh,
or
else I it gets a hose again. That.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's from The Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we talk a lot about score and music. And so I did look up, the music was composed by Marco Beltrami.
Is that him?
I was just looking it up right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Megan was already looking it up.
Here's what I'm on.
And Dennis Smith. And others. I don't know, Megan, if you found any of the others, but it just said others. So now we're going to dive into the actual structure of the film using the Freytag pyramid, which is your standard beginning, catalyst, rise, crisis, climax, and realization. This movie is back and forth between, like, the present and the past, and it has flashbacks intertwined in the movie, and it kind of starts, like, in medias res, and so I think it's really well done. Like, I didn't get lost.
Yeah,
and
some parts were a little confusing.
I got lost. I'm like, what's the timeline? How old is he supposed to be? Mm. But I get confused easily.
No.
That's a me problem.
No, I agree with that, honestly. Like, because we were talking about that, too, kind of during the movie. Like, whoa, how old is he? Yeah, like, how long was he in prison for? Like, what? And I know that him and Elizabeth, or Liz, they were together for 6 years. And so I know, like, there was a timeline of 6 years there. But then when he was on trial, I don't know if they were technically together. So that'll be a whole thing when we kind of go into more in part two. Even though we pretty much know what happens to Ted Bundy, at least if you're familiar with the Ted Bundy trials. Like, we know that he got executed. But it's interesting to have it from Liz's point of view, because you do get these flashbacks, but it's not only of him in prison and him on the trial, but you get this emotional conflict with Liz and flashing back on their relationship and how she loved him, but she's conflicted because he's possibly this murderer and she's not sure.
It makes you feel more too. Yeah, so we were talking about how watching this from Liz's point of view, you seriously have to remind yourself throughout the movie that this dude killed and raped and did whatever he did to 30 different people, because you start to feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even in the movie with the acting, you kind of start to believe that maybe he didn't do it. And then you have Zac Efron playing the kid, and when he puts that red bandana on, it's like, damn!
He's innocent.
Like, all right, let's backtrack a little bit here. Let's remind ourselves, who are we dealing with?
Well, I think it was, like, the director, it was an interview with someone, I'm just on the internet, you know. And they were like, they wanted the viewer to feel as blindsided as Liz did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, giving us all these emotional times, him playing with her daughter,
mm-hmm.
Molly?
Molly.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just to show us how manipulative he is, how
mm-hmm.
persuasive he is, how charming, because I think a lot of people were blindsided by this. Yeah, there were some... They didn't show this in the film, but I guess Liz found, like, weird shit in her house,
mm-hmm.
like a random meat cleaver
mm-hmm.
and women's clothes. And he would look at her at nighttime under the blankets with a flashlight. They did briefly show that.
He's like, I'm
so there were some indications that they didn't really depict in the film that were, like, creepy and weird,
mm-hmm.
just odd, bizarre. I mean, that's not necessarily indicative that someone's a serial killer, but it means they're a fucking weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. I read that too, that she found, like, weird shit in her apartment, and she called the cops, and they were like, like, it's probably okay. And apparently, a lot of when that beach event occurred where women were saying this guy was approaching me with this arm sling and saying he needs help with whatever he needed help with. And the sketch came out, so Liz called the police and were like, this kind of looks like my boyfriend. But the police didn't really take it seriously because apparently a lot of girlfriends were calling in about their boyfriends.
Really?
Saying, this looks like my boyfriend. So
I mean, it was a very vague sketch that could have been any Caucasian male with brown hair.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like anyone.
Yeah. The only thing that's really distinct about Ted Bundy, I think, is that, which I don't know, I've never studied Zac Efron's face, but they have the same nose where it's that very, like, flat bridge. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, whoop. And that was very distinct in, not that sketch, but the one sketch from the Chi Omega, whatever it's called. Sorority house. Chi Omega. I was never in a sorority. I don't know. I don't speak funny. Greek. Sorry.
She didn't say chi, so it's
okay. Chi Omega. But it was very distinct in this very kind of like stick figure sketch. It was like this very like sharp bridge nose. And you're like, you're looking at Ted Bundy, you're like, yeah, that's his nose. Like, I don't know.
I guess they also, she found, like, plaster and, like, medical supplies that he admitted to stealing in their apartment, too. So that's, like, sketchy. Like, bro, why do you have plaster? Like, what's, like, for, like, a cast.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That sword. Like, medical stuff like that. Like, that, I don't know. That's a red flag, but.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, like, if my boyfriend had that stuff in our apartment, I'd be like, hey, that's weird. Can you explain this to me in detail, why this is happening? So, to talk about certain aspects of the movie, there was a couple scenes that really stuck out to me that I took notes on. The first one being him chopping up, it was very early on in the movie, but him with that, like, butcher's knife, like, chopping the vegetables.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of just, like, swinging it around.
He was good with it.
Yeah, he's like, good morning, girlfriend. Yeah. Like, just swinging this knife around, and you're like, I mean, I guess you wouldn't think twice about it if you didn't think your boyfriend was a murderer, but.
But I'm gonna watch people now.
Mm-hmm.
Just be like, they're handling that knife way too well.
Yeah.
They're either a chef or a serial killer. Those are the only two options.
Yeah, the only two options. But yeah, and so I thought that was interesting in the kitchen. And then in the dog shelter, she said something like, oh, it was when they met Carol. That's her name, Carol.
Yeah.
They found Carol.
Carol Boone, not Carol Baskin.
Carol Baskin, yeah. Carol Boone. And she said, oh, I'm going to steal this handsome stranger away. Like Liz said about Ted Bundy. And I was like, I wonder, maybe it's not, maybe I'm thinking too much into it, but I wonder if they specifically, like, wrote that in the script because, like, handsome stranger, like, because I truly believe you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
You, like, I mean, look, like, they dated for 6 years.
Oh, yeah, you mean, like, I totally just got what you're trying to say.
Yeah, yeah.
It clicked all
like
the
stranger.
The wine made me a little confused. But, yeah, you truly don't know who you're friends with, sleeping with, etc. You know, you never truly know someone that, I don't know, she probably had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
He was very persuasive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super manipulative, so that's scary. And then still in the dog shelter, he looks that dog in the eye, he's just, like, mm-hmm. glaring on this dog, and the dog's barking at him.
That's also, like, a hella red sign. If mm-hmm. I had a dog and it, like, went that nuts just from eye contact, something's wrong with that person.
Yeah.
I don't trust you if my dog barks at you like that.
It can yeah. see through your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was, like, evil barking. Like, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, I'm happy. Like, it was like, there is
it
danger.
Is, like,
but Liz was just, like, still smiling in the background, like, haha, we're at a dog shelter, we're getting
yeah.
a dog. Like,
yeah,
this
like,
is great.
The part that really freaked me out was when he was barking at her. Like, when they were messing around. I hate when humans bark. I hate it so freaking much. It makes me feel so uncomfortable, so I hated that part.
So, I, like, kind of got into, like, if he would love her or not, if Bunny loved Liz, and someone, one of their answers, this is totally not like a expert of anything, just someone online was saying that Liz was really easily manipulated. She played the part, and she played the part as a girlfriend, but also apparently she got down and dirty when he wanted to in the bedroom.
Really?
She did all kinds of craziness.
Really?
Oh, Christian Grey coming at you, like.
So they did, like, freaky stuff.
So he got out some of those fantasies on her without killing her.
Oh.
Hmm. Yuck.
Yuck.
Like, I don't know. That's, I don't know. Any other scenes that stuck out to you guys? in particular? I mean, besides, like,
that is, like, the whole ass movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't get that bandana out of my head.
Oh, he looks like a snack.
Mm-hmm. Straight freaking.
Zac Efron. We just want to, Zac Efron, not Ted Bundy. Zac Efron.
Okay, but that's in, I like that they picked him for the movie because they showed all of the girls that were kind of showing up to his trial swooning over him.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other scene, I mean, just showing him kind of, what was he doing? Like, sawing the ceiling out to just out of it and jumping off of the bed onto the floor or whatever to practice jumping. Like, it just all shows how freaking smart he is.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, crazy, crazy smart.
Yeah. No, and that's what's scary about him is that he was so charismatic and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, no wonder girls fell into his trap. Like, there wasn't that they were dumb. It was just that he was so freaking smart. Like, he was known for being this attractive guy, and women would flee from all over the country to come watch his trial in person because they were attracted to him. And as weird as it sounds, I guess it makes sense. I also watched the Netflix documentary. It's a 4-part series. It's a Ted Bundy tapes. And it basically, honestly, recounts the trial as well, and kind of goes over before the trial and the murders. It is very closely related to the movie itself. The movie took basically verbatim the transcripts from the courtroom and all the media attention that Ted Bundy got and put it in the movie. So just a few things. There, honestly, I don't believe were a lot of differences, but I know that one of the big differences was that Ted called Liz before he was about to get executed, like a couple days or whatever it was, and confessed to her. And he said, I'm sorry, like, I don't know if he apologized, but he basically said, like, I'm a sick individual.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Like, I did this, I'm sick.
So he admitted to everything to her, where in the movie that we just saw, he did not. He
kind of was like, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to look a little bit more into it for part two, but I don't know how in depth. I don't know if he was like, yes, I killed 36 women or whatever, but I know that
at least
that we know of. Yeah. So he at least said, I'm sick. Mm-hmm. I have an illness. And another one of, this is a small difference, but in the documentary, when he escaped from prison, we saw a part of that where he mapped out this very elaborate plan to get out of the prison cell and how he sawed the light fixture out. But in the documentary, it said that there was, I don't know if it was a light fixture or whatever it was, some kind of small opening, but he lost a bunch of weight just to fit through that.
Really?
And I'm like, I can't even lose weight now. Like, maybe I should go to prison and try to escape, and then that would be motivation. Like, I don't know. But yeah, so he lost, I forget what they said, like 40 pounds or something?
What the hell?
Yeah.
He didn't even have 40 pounds on him to lose.
Yeah.
He must have been a stick.
Yeah, because he had to fit through the hole. So he was just a very smart, psycho guy. But yeah, but like I said, basically everything was word for word in the documentary, and those are the only differences that I know of, but there may have been some more, but everything that I was reading said that the movie was very true to the actual trial, besides mm-hmm. those couple differences. So in the Netflix series, in the beginning, there was an interview with Ted Bundy, and he basically said, like, there's nothing in my childhood that would make you think I was a murderer. Like, there wasn't, like, the very stereotypical, like, abusive mom, or you see, like, Mike Myers in Halloween, or Michael Myers, not Mike Myers, Michael Myers in Austin. Yeah, baby. Michael Myers in Halloween, where he had this, like this extremely abusive father and this stripper mm-hmm. mother, and he was bullied. Like, he said whether there was or not, maybe he was just hiding it, but there was no indication of, like, this kid's going to be a serial killer. So I know, Megan, you were looking up some stuff that said,
I briefly looked into it. We can dive into it for episode 2, but it mentioned that he thought his mom was his sister and was exposed to pornography at a really young age.
He thought his mom was his sister.
That happens a lot of times where...
Happens to me, huh?
Yeah. No, I mean, if it's a teen parent and the grandparents raise a child, and then that gives you some identity issues when you're arguing with what you think is your sister. It turns out to be a bio parent. But,
which is so crazy because his mom was in, I mean, briefly, but she was in the movie and she was in the documentary and she was like, Ted was such a good kid. Like, she seemed like she was...
Shocked.
It seemed like she was shocked, and she also seemed like she had a significant role in his life. Mm-hmm. So whether or not that's the case, we'll dive into that in part two, but yeah, he said there was no indication of that he was going to be...
Like, no red flags of, like, hurting animals or other children or anything like that?
Yeah, not that we know of, I don't think. So, but he had a degree in psychology, and then he eventually went to law school, and he tried to get into a more renowned law school, but then he didn't make the cut. He got a low LSAT score, so he went to, like, a, quote, crappy law school. And so he was a little bit embarrassed by that because he had a lot of fear of... he had this overwhelming fear of rejection, and... apparently, at least in the documentary, his girlfriend Liz, who we see in the movie, broke up with him, and he wanted to get revenge. That's what the documentary said, or they thought maybe he wanted to get revenge because he seemingly murdered women that looked a lot like Liz.
Yeah,
his MO was to middle part, long hair, girls that could emulate. He could get his revenge fantasy without actually hurting her.
I am Ted Bundy's type. And it freaks me the hell out. Like, to think if I were living, like, 30 years ago or whatever in Colorado.
I think he rejected that idea, but I think it's totally true. He's like, no, that's just what pretty women look like. They all look like that.
Did people bring it up to him? Like, you're only doing this to this majority of women that look like this?
Maybe, but he just denied everything all the time. Oh. Like, pretty much up until his death, he was like, I'm innocent. I didn't do this. So, I don't know if he was trying to, like, save face or... Because I know, like, someone like Israel Keyes, the serial killer, he did these gruesome, awful, just random murders. I mean, like, there was no, like, he didn't care what you looked like, he didn't care who you were, like, just randomly just killed you. Mm-hmm. And that's almost scarier than what Ted Bundy did, I guess. But he wanted to... So, like, Ted Bundy... if he wanted to save face, Israel Keyes was so concerned about not having his name tarnished because he had like an 8-year-old daughter. So when they said, they were sending him to prison, he said, listen, I'll tell you where these bodies are, but you have to promise me my name is not going to be tarnished. And I'm like, dude, you murdered these women. Like, get over it. Like, how do you think they felt when you were killing them? Like, you don't get that choice anymore.
Although that intrigues me psychologically, if he has enough thought and empathy to feel for his daughter and want her to live a normal life, like, what would his diagnosis be? Or he just had a fucking huge ego and didn't want it, like, he wanted to go with a good reputation.
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? But, yeah, so, and Ted Bundy, too, he was so scared of the death penalty, and that irks me so much to think of murderers being scared of the death penalty, because I'm like, you had a choice not to do this.
Yeah, like,
those girls,
hell?
Yeah, you,
that's
those
exactly
girls,
what you did to everybody.
Yeah,
you gave these people the death penalty of I don't know, murder. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But his was humane. Well, I don't know how much he suffered. I've never been electrocuted, but I'm assuming it hurts.
It's not fun.
yeah but it can't hurt worse than being strangled so much that your neck is half its size.
Can you imagine that?
I don't even know how your neck does that.
Those pantyhose up.
How do they not rip? I want that durability of those pantyhose.
True. Yeah.
Call me up. Give me the brand. I need that.
What did they say? Her neck was in an inhumane position.
Yeah.
When they found her, when he had strangled her to death.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Chills, dude. Like, when they said inhumane position, chills.
I was like, shit.
Yeah. Because it means, like, these human hands made, like, molded this inhuman neck. I don't know, like, if that makes sense. But seriously, like, it's so scary.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. He did something with a hairspray bottle. He ruptured her internal organs. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
That was one of the sorority girls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how... Okay. Yeah, this is pretty gruesome, but how hard? Yeah. Okay. We won't go into it. Yeah. Yeah. So, let's move on. But, so, when Ted was in... I don't know if it was, like, during his trial or if he was just being interviewed or just seen as a person of interest or suspect. They were trying to get out of him. They were trying to get just some sort of confession out of him. And he's like, nope, I didn't do it. Nope, I didn't do it. And so I think it was the detective that was like, so we're going to make him talk in the third person. And we're going to say, okay, Ted, we know that you didn't do this. But if someone were going to do this, what do you think they would look like? How do you think they would act? Mm. And basically, he just described himself. Like, really? he was like, well, they would probably be sick. And then they also said, they said, hey, Ted, are you innocent? And he was like, ha ha, that's such a funny word. Like, do you mean when I was 5 and stole a comic book from the store? Then no, I'm not innocent. And they're all just like, so are you? I'm like, I probably would have just been like, yeah. Like, I don't know, like, he's just like, he has this such weird, like, where he's not saying, like, no, I'm innocent, or yes. Like, it's almost like trying to clear his own conscience, mm-hmm. as if there's, like, some higher power that is judging him right now. And he's like, well, if I don't lie, then I won't be judged. Yeah. I don't know.
It's just like he's a master deflector. He is so charismatic that he can talk around the point and avoid answering directly. Mm-hmm. Like when the cop asked if he's been to Colorado and he's like, I don't have time to leave. I'm so busy with school. Oh, yeah. He didn't explicitly say, no, man, I've never been to Colorado. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say, yeah, I go there every weekend. He knows how to talk around the point.
Yeah. No, avoidant. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, he is a very good deflector. I didn't even think about that. Didn't even think about that scene where he just completely was like, yeah, I don't know. And another part in the documentary, they said, have you ever physically harmed someone? And he's like, have I? No. Like he's like thinking about it. Then he's like, well, not in the way that you're talking about. And you're like, why wouldn't you just say no, man? Like, it's like he is literally just like giving you a confession. He's almost, like, messing with them. I don't know if he's messing with them or trying to clear his conscience or just trying not to lie.
He just doesn't like to, lie. He just talks around it and says a half-truth.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what is going on in his brain.
That's why we need to have a therapist come on and talk us through the psychology of the serial killer, because we're not exactly qualified for that.
Because I don't know what to tell you.
So, yeah, in the documentary, which is also shown in the movie, he jumped 25 feet out of the window, which Jenna was talking about how he was, like, in the movie, you see him practicing, which I don't know if he actually did that or not, but he was practicing, like, jumping off his bed onto the floor, and we were like, what's he doing? And here he was...
I thought he was trying to get her on purpose to go to the infirmary or something.
And break his ankle? Yeah. No,
that was a high-ass jump, too.
25 feet? So that was when he escaped from the courthouse... and then he also escaped from jail, so he just kept escaping everywhere. But after he escaped from the courthouse, he went to Florida, and that's where the sorority house murders happened. And he was driving his Volkswagen around, and he had a different ID on him, so he got pulled over. And actually, shout out to David Lee, he was the police officer that pulled him over. And he's like, hey, man, do you have your ID? And he's like, oh, yeah, totally. And in the movie, he punches the cop and he runs away. So I don't know how accurate that is, if he actually beat up the cop or if the cop just took him in. I'm assuming there has to be something. But so Ted, like, looked a little bit different in the documentary. But he looked different because he had a mustache. And it made me think, like, he just put on this, like, fake, just like glued on this fake mustache and was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I am not Ted. I am Eduardo. Like, it's just like, and it's like very obviously Ted, but he just has this mustache and everyone's like, and the judge is like, man, we don't know who this guy is. Like, who is this guy? And we're like, are you kidding? Like, all he did is grow a mustache.
Although I read that they had so much trouble catching him initially is because of how his face is. That sounds weird to say, but every picture that they had of him looked different. His mm-hmm. facial expressions made him look like completely different people. He had this, like, he was like the master of disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't pinpoint who he was because he looked so different in every appearance. Oh. So maybe the mustache did work.
Yeah.
You want to get away with a crime? Slap on a mustache.
Yeah. That's my strategy. I just put on a fake mustache. No. I didn't know. That's pretty actually cool. I didn't know that. But yeah, he does kind of have one of those faces that can be just, I guess, transformed or into anybody. But I just don't know.
Ooh, I just think the cops are trying to cover for how inept they were that they let him escape twice.
Mm-hmm. They're like, ah, crap. Like, I don't know. But, and then also in the movie, verbatim taken from the transcripts or the media was when the sheriff was reading his indictment, and Ted's, like, you can see in the movie, and at the end of the movie, they show a clip of it, too. He's just walking around, like, he's handcuffed, but he's, like, he's walking around. He's like, yeah, you're up for re-election, right? Like, yeah, you want to read this? Like, I'm innocent. Like, I'll plead. Like, I can talk to the press now. Like, he's walking around. At one point, like, in the actual video, they had to stop him because he was walking, like, so close to the press. Like, let me talk. And obviously, he was under a gag order, so he couldn't talk. But, so, that was just kind of, just shows how manipulative he was. And
I feel like he had this, like, delusion of grandeur. Like, he had this heightened sense of self that he could get away with anything, that he was innocent, that he was better than the cops or the prosecutors, anything mm-hmm. like that. He's just had a huge ego.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that, because even he represented himself in court. He fired his lawyer, like, in the middle of court. Yeah, he just represented himself. And
he's like, all right. He said, fuck it, we ball.
Yeah.
He said, here we go.
And I think that was probably the first and only time that's ever happened that anybody has ever been their own counsel. So, but, and even, like, at the end of the movie and the documentary, the judge basically tells him, like, it was an honor. I mean, like, you're kind of crazy, and it's a shame. It's a waste of humanity, but you're smart, dude. Like,
I would have loved to have you
in here. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, he was good at what he did, but, and this was actually the first time that a trial would be covered on TV, which makes me want to go back and find the trial somewhere and watch it.
I wonder what they would have it on.
Yeah, I wonder if it's on, like, YouTube or something.
YouTube, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we saw pretty much all of it on the movie, but I would like to see it, like...
That's so interesting that's the first televised trial. Okay, Judge Judy, you have Ted Bundy to thank for your career.
Yeah, like, seriously.
That's crazy, because that thing seems so normalized for us
mm-hmm.
and today, you know, like, there's all kinds of stuff that's between, like, the cops show or yeah. whatever. Like, you see all types of televised
yeah.
litigation.
And Michael Jackson and
oh,
OJ.
Yeah.
You know what I want to do is I want to ask my parents about, like, when, like, my mom, what she thought when this was going on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they would have
was your mom in the fan like, club?
I mean, pretty probably. She's nutty.
Yeah. My mom was probably, my mom won't want me to say how old she would be because people would be, like, doing the math. Probably, like, 20 years old.
Right?
When this was happening.
Same. My mom's gonna be 60 soon, so, mm-hmm. yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, my parents are old.
hope Jenna's parents aren't listening.
Are you the baby?
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so also in the movie, you see a depiction of this, but in the documentary, another one of his manipulation tactics, but he said, like, his jail cell... He was like, my jail cell's too dark. Can I go somewhere else? And I'm like, okay, Ted. Like, they gave him, like,
really?
This... Yeah, they gave him, like, this whole, like, study
oh, yeah,
to study in.
He was able to...
He manipulated a whole-ass library with a telephone
yeah.
and a window.
Yeah.
How he escaped. Mm-hmm. But, like, he's so persuasive. His power of manipulation
mm-hmm.
and persuasion is amazing.
Yeah.
I want some of that confidence. I want that skill set.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can attest that to his intelligence or just the negligence of the 70s. I don't know. Like, I obviously was not around in the 70s, so I don't know what the law enforcement was like, but maybe
That's
it was a little
true.
Bit more lenient back then. Maybe they kind of trusted him. Like, you look at someone like Ed Kemper, who was like, he coined the phrase serial killer. And he was just this big guy. He was like 7 feet tall, and he murdered his grandparents when he was a kid. And then he became friends with the police officer. They called him like, Big Ed or something. Like they were all cool with him. And his psychologist was like, oh, he's fine. Like, he's cool. He's not going to murder anybody else. As soon as they let him out of the psych ward, he murdered people.
Oh my God.
Like, but all the police officers were like, well, there's no way. Like, they even talked to Ed about the crimes that were like being committed. And Ed was just literally like taking mental notes. Like, oh, I can get away with it because they don't check here. Or, oh, I can do this because they're not going to do this. Like, don't talk to an ex-serial or an ex-murderer about how you catch murderers. Like, because then he's going to do...
It's giving away your secrets.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's basically, like, I mean, Ed Kemper is a whole other story. But I wonder if there's a movie based on him. But anyway, so that's a whole other thing. But either way, so there's a lot of, like, Ed Kemper had a very high IQ. And I'm assuming Ted Bundy did, too.
Well, and dumb killers get caught.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you have to be smart to get away with... I mean, eventually everyone, for the most part, gets caught. But to get away with it as long as he did, you have to be smart.
Yeah. Yeah, because Ted Bundy was in law school. Ed Kemper... I don't know if he was in medical school or...
He's in middle school.
In middle school. Medical school.
He had his middle school education. He was good to go.
I don't know if... but he did have some kind of training where it was very meticulous when he... Not to go into gruesome details, but when he did his thing, they knew specifically, like, whether it was him or whether it was somebody else because of the clean cuts.
Like, the accuracy. Precision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because some people would just, like, chop him up, but they knew, like, oh, this guy is very clean and neat, and... Yeah, so you just, like, I hate to say, like, serial killers are really smart, but, like, well, not all of them, but I guess, like, the select few are... very intelligent, and that's scary. But and at the end of the movie, they had said, you know, a killer could be anybody.
Oh my God, that part freaked me out.
What is the statistic with, like, how many serial killers you meet in your lifetime and don't realize it, that you pass in a year?
I don't know what the statistic is, but I think there's...
Jenna's never going to leave her house.
I'm never leaving my house.
But then there's demons in your house.
Shut up!
She's going to go sleep at the church.
Seriously, wrong with you guys.
But, like, I mean, there could be murders in the church.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to Google it, and the first thing that pops up is how many serial killers are from Ohio.
Oh, God. There was one that just recently, not recently, but in the past couple years, like, was in Ashland, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. Shout out to my alma mater.
Some badass on Reddit did the math for someone, this is, I'm reading this, FYI, living in an average-sized city, 10 new people per day times 365 days per year times 71 years of living, about 260,000 separate individuals, somebody might walk by in a lifetime about 16 murderers. So you could pass by 16 murderers in your lifetime.
Is it you?
No.
It's Jenna.
It's Jenna.
She doesn't remember what happened last night. She's totally on a murder spree.
Stop.
yeah, if anyone was a murderer last night, we all know who it was. no, that's scary. I haven't heard that specific one, obviously, but I've heard some kind of just random statistics that was like, you're going to walk by 3 murderers in your lifetime or something.
That's so,
like,
messed up. Because now creepy. I'm going to be eyeing the cashier at the Cane's drive-thru in about, like, half an hour here. Like,
although we always suspect certain people, but it's someone that you... It could be the most charismatic, gorgeous, average-looking person, you know? Like, the most mundane human. It doesn't have to be someone who's sketchy-looking or, like... I don't know, in a dark alley.
Right, yeah, like hiding, like a troll in a dark alley.
Hiding, so I don't know.
Okay.
Here we go. So I don't know if this is true or not, but I did see somewhere that there were these people hiking in those mountains that he would take the bodies. And do you have this on your notes?
Right? No, I'm just looking up what the Taylor Mountain.
Taylor Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor
is what it's called.
Taylor Mountain. Yeah.
I'm like, we're making a song. Let's have a jingle.
Rock Candy Mountain. What was that? Like, Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Gander Mountain. Oh. Fish. Whatever the last one is.
I know. Can't wait.
So these people were hiking in Taylor Mountain, and it was starting to get dark, I think. I'm probably pulling this all out of my ass.
She has a great imagination, you guys.
Once upon a time.
So they were hiking, and it was getting dark, and they... Oh, Man, what happened? I think that they, like, tripped over something or something like that, and Ted Bundy was hiding in the woods because he was bringing the bodies there, and I'm pretty sure he, like, tripped over one of the bodies. I'm not kidding. I don't know if this actually happened.
Over the bodies, mm-hmm. not over Ted. He was hiding, like, in the leaves, like,
fleshy stump. Oh, wow. Shrugs and walks away.
He just, like, covers up in leaves, like, yeah. Like, he's, like, in one of those bush.
Up in the tree.
Camouflage, just, like.
What no, is it, the ghillie costume?
Yeah, like, you have, like, the moss all over you.
It's like a bush. Happened and I'm not making it up.
Yeah.
We'll look into it for next time.
Yeah, we'll look into it. Yeah, no, apparently they found, in just 1975, they found six women at Taylor Mountain. And you know what's pretty fucked up is that he wanted to be cremated, and then he wanted his ashes scattered at Taylor Mountain. And I'm like, I would have been like, no. You don't get that. Like, if I were that family, and that were my mom, my sister, whatever, I'd be like, I do not want his ashes where... You know what I mean? Like, that's so...
Bonus episode, we're going to Taylor Mountain.
You would not.
No, I would. I would.
So you would go hiking in a potentially haunted place, but you won't go stay in a nice bed and breakfast that's potentially haunted?
Make it and afraid. Let's do it, baby.
With serial killers, there's a difference between, like, insects and snakes versus a fucking... serial killer in a ghillie costume in a tree.
She's like,
ready to get you.
And you know what? What is it? Like, the murder, like, reenactments? Like, people actually do that where they will go back to, like, places people were murdered or whatever and reenact
just
the murder.
Just pretend to be
it's
bad.
It's like LARPing. Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, no, like, the murderers will do that.
What?
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like in American Horror Story, in the very first season in Murder House, like, I mean, this is a very, like, kind of...
true story, you guys.
Yeah. Like, hyperbolic example, but they go to Murder House and they're trying to murder the family that lives there in the same exact way that the old family got murdered there by other murderers, because they're just trying to, like, live out their fantasy. So...
I hate that.
Yeah, so, and you'll see, like, copycat murders, too, where it's, like, for example, back to Ed Kemper, sorry, but Ed Kemper, like, he was out murdering people, but there was also another murderer doing something else at the same time, doing the same thing he was, because he was copying him. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't as neat and as clean as Ed Kemper was, so they knew it wasn't the same guy, because they're like, this guy's really neat, and this guy just chopping things up.
But serial killing 101, guys, don't return to the scene of the crime, whether it's to get off your, like, I don't know, murder fantasies or not, but that's again, the dumb killers that get caught.
Yeah.
That's the first place they fucking look is for, because it's common. They return to the scene of the crime, whether it's guilty conscience or to relive the experience.
My question
is, it's a high.
Yeah.
How did he cover up his fingerprints? Because they said that the fingerprints of the Florida house
that had 200 different fingerprints, and none of them were his. Well, I read this also. Apparently, we're all experts on this because we Googled everything. You guys.
Thank you, Google.
They said that he was like. He was an expert at not leaving any type of evidence behind, whether it's wearing gloves or not leaving any DNA. He was very deliberate about that. So it wasn't just like a crime of passion that he leaves it a mess and whatever. Well, I think he did, like, restage some of the stuff. He actually partook in, like, necrophilia. So he, like, restaged the bodies and did nasty and whatever.
Yeah.
But he was very...
take him to the woods and then do it again.
He was very deliberate with all of his actions. I feel like there's some serial killers that are just, like, blind rage, stab, stab, stab. It's a mess and then go. But I feel like his was very premeditated.
Yeah, meticulous.
Meticulous.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and that's another point they went over in the documentary was that he put... somebody on the stand, I'm sorry, I forget who it was, and he had them, I think it was the detective or the police officer that walked into the sorority house and found the dead girls, and he said, describe to me exactly what you saw, and they were like, he was living out of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to hear the guy describe, he said, can you tell me, and he kept saying it over and over, he would go, can you tell me if she was face up? Can you tell me if she was face up? Can you tell me, like, what way was she facing?
That's not a good way to seem innocent, though.
I know. It's like, tell me about it. Yeah. Describe it. But, yeah, so it was just, like, he was just living out this fucked up fantasy of reliving this horrible tragedy. Like, I don't know. But, and, yeah, so...
Anyways.
Yeah, but there's just so many crazy things about... This is why we have to do two parts of this movie and this story, because it's such a crazy thing. Like, I mean, he proposed to Carol in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was like,
she
hey.
Said yes. That's the weirder part. They were married for what? How many years?
Like, 10?
They
I think it was 10 years.
So how long until after was he exiled?
Executed?
Executed.
They said, get out.
He's living in Antarctica currently.
They said, get out of here. You're not welcome.
Taylor Swift song, never mind.
Oh, I was thinking of, like, the Lion
King,
too.
Well, they got divorced before he was executed. She filed for divorce, I think. But
Carol
they were,
did?
Yeah, they were married long enough for her to somehow mysteriously conceive a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, I don't know how long they... Like, he was there before... Again, the timeline. I don't know how long he was in the last place he was before he was executed.
Well, it said in the movie, so from the date, like, 78, I think it was, 78, that the judge was, like, death sentence. And then on the TV, on the movie, it said 10 years later. And then it went to the documentary style where it said... Ted Bundy's being executed.
So here's the next question. Again, going back to statistics, statistically, how long does it take someone who's on death row to get executed?
Apparently,
how long is it backed up? Why,
yeah.
Like, why does it take so long sometimes?
I don't know.
Or is it fast sometimes? I don't know how that works.
We'll have to look into that, too, because honestly, because he kept saying, like, when he was meeting with Liz in the, like, on the phone in the jail, he kept being like, it's going to be any day now. So maybe they're just waiting.
Yeah.
They're just in there waiting, like, today could be the day, or next week, or next year.
Ooh, that would make it even scarier for
Yeah, you
person.
Never know.
You never know when today's your last day.
Well, it's got to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to kill somebody, right? Especially with lethal injection. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be expensive to buy poison.
But he got electrocuted in the chair. Right?
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's got
to... Isn't that, like, not the most effective way to kill people, and that's why they do lethal injection?
Yeah, it's, like, not humane. We ever see, like, the Green Mile?
A little bit.
Oh.
Here or there. It scared me when I was...
Oh, young. Yeah. It's very, like...
What's the Eminem movie?
8 Mile?
Green Mile? Or not, oh, 8 Mile,
I used to get those confused.
Oh, yeah, totally, like, John Coffey.
Very
and,
different, but I used to get them confused.
Yeah, but no, that movie is, like, not based upon, but, well, it is based upon death row and, like, the electric chair, so it's, but there's this one scene where there's this guy, and he's obviously on death row, and they go to electrocute him, and it doesn't go according to plan, because one of the officers, like the warden's nephew, I think, and he does it wrong on purpose, and it just goes horribly wrong. But so obviously that's extremely inhumane. It took him like forever to die, and but I don't know, like, I don't know how long it takes with that. I don't know. I'm assuming it's got to be painful. So yeah, so basically they deem that as inhumane, so now they do lethal injections with all but
and
like,
how long does that take?
I think a couple minutes, I think.
So I looked up botched executions.
Oh, God.
And there was around 3,000 hangings. I don't know where this is. There's 85 botched hangings.
Ugh. So you just, like, suffocate?
84 botched electrocutions out of, like, 4,374. Lethal gas, there's 32 out of 593. And then 75 botched lethal injections out of 1,000. So it doesn't seem like it's... that many people that survive it. It just must be not humane or, like, really painful or something.
Yeah. I wonder what that means by...
botch? Like, did they survive?
Yeah.
Or, like, were there serious complications?
Yeah, like, what... did it take longer than expected? Was it super... like, did they not fall asleep during... because the lethal injection, it does, like, an anesthetic first, right? Where you go to sleep and then it does the poison or whatever you call it.
Well, then there's, like, the urban legends about the people that, like, they're like, oh, I survived my execution, so then I'm free or something. Like, didn't you guys ever hear that?
Like, I've heard, like, something about
that. I don't
that.
Know what that is. I don't know.
Yeah, if you, like, survive your execution, you just walk free. You're like, well.
That's a new life.
Yeah. Like, they were like, well, we can't do anything now. Like, must just let him go. It's like a vampire or something. But, yeah, so, and at the end of the documentary, they kind of showed another interview with him. And he was just very proud. He wasn't, there was no remorse. There was no guilt. He was very proud of what he did. And he was, like, bragging about, because that we know of, there was 36 women that he killed. But he bragged about, I think it was, like, over 100. And it's just so, how could you, it's like bragging about getting an A in your class. You know, like, it's like you, the equivalent that, I just can't.
How did he manage to do that while going to law school, maintaining a girlfriend and...
Yeah, Ted Bundy. What the fuck?
And he had time management.
Yeah, right. He obviously was very time managed, because that's absolutely right. How did you have time to do all that? And cover your fingerprints? Like,
right.
I don't have time to shower. Like, right. Let alone kill people and cover my tracks. I don't know.
And go to law school. Law school is time consuming. Unless it was just a really fucking shitty law school and they're like, anything goes, guys.
Yeah, come when you kill people. No, I'll tell you what. Like, when I was in grad school, it was like, I only did grad school. Like, it was, I don't know. I could never think about murdering anybody. Well, because, well,
for sure.
For a couple different reasons, but the first one being that I shouldn't.
She doesn't kill because she doesn't have time. That's it. She yeah. wants to, though.
I just don't have time, everybody. So, lucky
priorities.
For you guys. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what scared us. So, like we kind of said in the beginning, this is not a scary movie, but the idea of it is scary. It's scary to think about Ted Bundy, what he did. It's also scary to think about us passing by 16 murderers in our lifetime, and what if that happens to you?
Right, so, it's real. It's not something supernatural or fantasy-based. It's something that could be your neighbor.
Yeah. So I think what scared me the most was, this was probably dramatized, I'm not sure, but when he's in the jail cell, he's talking on the phone with her, like, through the glass partition, and she's like, where did her head go? And
oh,
he
gosh,
just starts
that,
writing.
Yeah.
Like, two things to say about that. The first one, second one, he's a very good, like, he very easily wrote backwards.
He also has, like, a lot of hot,
you know,
breath.
I mean?
How did he breathe enough to make
yeah.
that foggy?
He's like, hold
lung
on.
Capacity.
Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, like, how humid is it in there that you could write that? But yeah, so he basically, so spoiler alert, but Liz shows Ted a picture of this headless woman and
says...
Was
that like a real crime scene picture?
It looked like it.
Yeah,
it probably was.
I mean, her head was off of,
like,
her
saw
body.
Off.
I'd
yeah.
be more
you
interested to see the
neck.
One with the neck issue.
Yeah.
That one
oh
sounds interesting.
I bet there's
gosh.
Somewhere we can find the pictures.
Then I feel like the FBI is going to come get me if
yes,
I try to look
Ted
up
Bundy,
crime scene
yeah.
pictures.
No, but yeah, so she showed him this picture of this headless woman and said, it took me 10 years to open this. I need to know. Put me at peace. Where is her head? And he's like, I didn't do it. And then eventually he gives in and just starts, like, writing, like, on the window through, like, this, like, steam or humidity. Just, he just writes hacksaw. And then it kind of flashes back and forth as he's writing
to him
hitting the girl over the head with a crowbar and dragging her and grabbing the hacksaw. And it's just, that gave, like, I'm literally getting chills right now. That gave me chills.
It was so fucked.
Because it's true. It happened.
Well, and like, they built it up with our emotional connection to him. We empathized
yes.
with him. He was the anti-hero. We rooted for him. But then there was inferred gore. No one ever, they didn't explicitly show any blood. They didn't show the murders. We only saw when he came and went from his relationship with Liz. We didn't see him committing these acts of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happened, I was thinking, oh, I'm safe. I don't need to watch anything too violent today. Nothing scary is going to happen. He whacks her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's not any more violent than anything we've ever seen,
mm-hmm.
but it was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And it caught me off guard. And it was jarring, especially when it's someone that we've emotionally connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we realize it or not, maybe rooting for him,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. Rooting for him is a good way to put it, because through Liz's perspective, it did show that very emotional and empathetic, like, it made us empathetic towards him. And like Jenna said earlier, you had to keep reminding yourself, you're like, oh man, like, I felt bad for him in the movie when he was on trial. He was crying, he's upset, and you have to remind
mm-hmm.
yourself, wait, this, I'm not on your side. Like, this is the wrong feeling. But I think that is what is so well done about this movie, is that they show this, even though he was this monster, they also show this dynamic that he was also human.
Well, that was his other, the other half of his life.
Mm-hmm.
he didn't live his life as a monster holed up somewhere taking photographs and just like living in isolation. He had this whole, it was a secret life. He had a double life. He lived a normal, to an extent, normal life, maintain a relationship, help raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was completely unexpected except for the weird articles of clothing she'd find at the house. But I guess that could be kind of explained away or pushed to the back of your mind, swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, what would your strategy be, Bree?
What would my strategy be?
Bree's a skeptic. I feel like you'd discover him instantly.
Yeah, I'd be like, no. Yeah, the good thing about me with serial killers is I don't trust anybody. So I don't trust...
Her cat could be a killer.
Yeah, I'm like, my cat's gonna kill me. No, I... So this one time, I'm gonna go off on a tangent. I was in the grocery store, and I unknowingly had dropped my Jack Casino card that had my first and last name on it, and I didn't know I dropped it, and there was this guy that started chasing after me saying, hey, what's your name? What's your name? And I started, like, running, and he's this, like, old guy. He's like, hey, you dropped your card. But, like, in that scene, that might seem kind of like an over-exaggeration, but in today's world, even, like, apparently in the 70s, it's not, because you see so many stories about young women being trafficked, and just even like around us, like 10 minutes from our house is mm-hmm. where I live, is a hot spot in the entire country for human trafficking.
Girls getting chloroformed at the movie theater and yeah. dragged out and stuff. I don't know.
You don't know.
As women, especially, we can't trust anyone. You have to be skeptical of any interaction, whether it's with another woman.
Yeah.
They use children to lure women for sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard, but you don't want to be, like, paranoid and freaked out by everybody, but you want to be...
Yeah. I would rather be paranoid.
Appropriately skeptical of mm-hmm. things.
I think, so if I were, let's say, my strategy, if I were kidnapped by Ted Bundy, I'd probably just roll him over and tickle his snout. Tickle his belly. You know, like
put
you do
him
with...
to sleep.
Yeah. Just try to make him fall asleep. No, on a
That's what you do for sharks, if anyone missed that episode.
Yeah. You're
like, wow, these fucking weirdos are tickling serial killers.
Call back to episode one. No, I would fight as hard as I can. Like, I am not going down with fight. I will gouge your eyes out. Like, I will do whatever I can to...
She was missing a nipple.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not Bree.
Yeah. Yeah.
The victim.
I have both of my nipples. No, yeah. There was... Yeah, in the sorority house, right?
Yeah.
She so was, did he, like, yeah. bite
one,
it off? Snip
yeah,
it
one
off?
Nipple. Yeah.
These
like,
are the real questions
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Whatever.
What would you, okay, gosh. Jenna, what would your strategy be? You're kidnapped by Ted Bundy.
She'd protect her nipples.
All right, I think that my strategy would be, I hate to have to think about this, but I don't know. I really don't know. I feel like it would have to be the same as you. Just fucking go for the balls. That's what my mom taught me when I was little. Like, when we were...
Okay. Yeah, mom.
No, she was like, you kick them in the privates, and you scream, scream, scream. And
yeah.
I said, okay. So
mm-hmm.
that's... I'll just, yeah, karate chop his ass if I could.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but...
But if you, but yeah, like that one scene where she's putting her books in the trunk and he just smashed her over the head with a car bar, like, I mean, I don't have fast reflexes. Like, I don't know. So it's hard to say.
Well, he
like,
had at least one victim that escaped. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was in a documentary too, as well as the movie.
I feel like we're smarter than the average person, so we could totally do what she did. Whatever she did, we could.
Are you degrading our listeners?
Yeah.
Call our listeners idiots?
What would you do, Megan?
Honestly, I'd probably die.
Oh my god.
If he looked and sounded like Zac Efron, especially with that red bandana.
Oh, that bandana, though.
I am too trusting. I'm, like, skeptical on the inside, but I'm like, let's hold hands. We're best friends now. So, I don't know. My mom told me that when a woman is being carried away, like if someone's attempting to kidnap you, to scream fire, because people are more they react better to that, which sucks. You can't scream, oh my god, he's kidnapping me. You gotta scream fire to
like,
get people's attention.
But they're like, oh, fire.
I guess
oh.
the answer is to not go places by yourself.
Yeah.
At nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Or ever.
Ever. Yeah, buddy system until
I mean,
the end of time.
The day that she got snatched.
Whacked.
Yeah. And don't trust people. Like, I hate to say that, but, like, especially in today's world or in the 75 when Ted Bundy was murdering people, like, just, yeah, buddy system, trust people, learn jujitsu. I don't know, like, some self-defense. By the way, we should take some self-defense classes.
I would love that.
We
should.
Yeah.
We can vlog it.
Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned.
Learning to fight monsters.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, anything else you want to say about the documentary, the movie?
Nope, just stay tuned for part two.
So, in closing, don't trust anybody. Just kidding.
Your cat could be a killer.
Yeah.
What we've decided.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of true crime, so I think I'm just very untrusting anyway. But anyway, so there is a part two coming, so stay tuned next week. We're going to dive a little bit more into psychology behind Ted Bundy himself, and we might just have a special guest, so we're excited for that. Make sure to check out our social media pages on Instagram. It is Screams and Queens Pod. On Twitter, it's Screams Podcast. We do also have a Patreon. You can find that on our website, which should be up by the time this episode airs. If not, what are we doing? But thank you guys once again for tuning in. We are Screams and Queens, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Bye.